This podcast is brought to you by O'Brien Hill. O'Brien Hill is a leading communications agency focusing on public relations, event management, and marketing. This is Wafala Bedat. You're listening to the Women Power Podcast, a subsidiary platform to the Women Power Summit, the largest event in MENA, with the aim of empowering women and helping them achieve their absolute highest potential. Each week on the Women Power Podcast, you will hear honest, vulnerable, authentic, real conversations from inspiring women. These women will share their experiences and stories into what it takes to build a successful business and career. The podcast will share insight and inspiration and hopefully inspire action and lead change. Noura bint Mohammed bin Abdullah bin Faisal Al Saud has over 15 years of experience working in the design field. Prior to her setting up her business, Noura Al Faisal worked on private commissions for over 15 years, during which she had the opportunity to develop her craft whilst building upon her apprenticeship and academic work in Paris and London. She then went on to launch the jewellery brand Noon. Noura Al Faisal is also the founder of Adlal, a platform that aims to support the emerging design industry in Saudi Arabia. Welcome, Noura. In most of my interviews, I find that most women struggle with perfection and they actually miss out because the flexibility is not there. They miss out on opportunities, they miss out on growth. How did you train yourself, or how did you become so agile and so adaptive?
I failed a lot, basically. So to just clarify, I used to be a perfectionist and I still am to a certain degree, a micromanager. And that's something I have to work on literally every day. But as well, I found that every single time something did not go exactly as I wanted it to, it opened up some new opportunity that I hadn't anticipated. So I've learned very, very much to trust in the flow of things and to just be observant and understand the opportunity that's opening up in front of me. It may not be what I had planned, but invariably, if you kind of go with the flow and you just are easy and you understand how to kind of make the most of a situation, whatever it is, or at least learn as much as possible from it, invariably you grow, invariably a new door opens, invariably you are led to something that's far more interesting than what you had anticipated in your kind of like little closed.
You're speaking to a fellow micromanager, and you know, I in my 20s I really felt like I had to force things to happen. I was so like I was always pushing, and I feel now very much so I'm all about flow. Like things, like I feel I'm collaborating with the universe to make things happen, and I want to be in the right headspace for things to come. Like I now feel like I shouldn't force anything. Things should also happen naturally, and I should take a step back and let that naturalness happen in my work. I've just discovered this, I think, during COVID, like the last few years. So it's incredible that you say that, because I think it's such a beautiful lesson. Like it's not force, it's flow. Like that's my theme for the year.
I think you have to understand that I started really late, right? So I had many, many years when I was working on commission jewelry, and I was essentially, I call it my arrested development phase, because I was learning. I was absorbing everything that I needed to know about design and the design process. I was learning how to kind of do that within myself and really just focusing on that. And then, you know, I started my business. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. It's 2013, 2014, when Noon Jewels was established. So if you think from then to now, it's not even 5 years. And I've just accelerated in that time. And I think it's because by the time I started the business, I really was in this place of just give it to God. I was already there because I really had, I was excited. I was scared. I was inexperienced, and I just wanted to learn as much as possible. So I didn't have like this set idea of how things had to be or how they didn't have to be. I'd already kind of removed that. And I think that's the only reason I accelerated so quickly in a relatively short time. And also, you know, age has the benefit of wisdom in certain scenarios.
It's a real gift. Like I wish I knew so many of the lessons I learned as I got older back when I was, like, if I could combine the wisdom now with the energy levels of my 20-year-old self.
I mean, I wish I started in my 20s. I mean, I think I've always got this appetite for life, this appetite for just like experiencing every opportunity that comes along, because I think, you know, I always think I'm kind of like really accelerating now, when most of the people I know are like thinking about retiring. You know, so it's like, I feel like I have like all this catching up to do.
I mean, I always feel like ambitious women just never want to retire, because I think if you figure out what you love to do and then do it every day, the energy you have is just like, you can't wait to wake up in the morning. You can't wait to go to sleep to start again tomorrow. Like it's life is so exciting. You also touched upon something which I really value, which is Noura, the learner. Like, you love to learn and grow, and that's obviously like a key value to you, which I appreciate. Can you tell me more about Noura before Noon, especially the parts of you that love to learn? You know, who was Noura like in the earlier part of your career, and maybe as a student as well?
I am an avid reader, like obsessive. When I was quite young, I like, my library was my life, and I would go back and I'd reread things. And when studying English Lit, I absolutely adored every minute of it. My favorite subject was criticism and reading about Plato and all the philosophers. It was just, you know, these concepts and these ideas. And so that's something I've always had. And that's something, I mean, I was really lucky in my family. We have that kind of reading. I mean, that's how we entertained ourselves in general. And it's something we've all kind of taken with us through the years. And it's just interest. I wanted, for example, to understand design. So I studied interior design, but I also read so much about architecture. I even believe now, if I had known now what I know then, I probably would have been an architect. Because everything that I love about jewelry design is in architecture. So it's just, to me, they're the same thing. And it's only kind of like the size that is different. And I just, I feel like, for me, I'm not, I mean, people really don't, maybe, I'm not a believer, especially in design and things like that. I'm not a believer in your traditional kind of education. Honestly, I believe that what we need to learn is how to be curious, how to be adaptive, and how to constantly be trying to feed ourselves. And the rest is, you know, the rest is down to you. It's never, I mean, I think I'm a really good example of it never being too late to start. I mean, honestly, I started in my 40s, Noon Jewels. I was already 40 when I started. And I didn't know anything about business. So I went off and I learned as much as I could. And then I decided to start Ablal, and I didn't know anything about that kind of a social enterprise. And then I went and I taught myself as much as I could. And I think, you know, if you have a curious mind, that's everything you need. And getting back to your original question, I'm sorry. So I was an introvert, basically, when I was a kid. I was that nerd in the corner. I would be like at family gatherings and I had my nose in a book. I would literally carry them with me wherever I went.
By the way, I used to be like that as well. And did you ever get bullied for reading? Did people make fun of you or be like, why are you always reading?
No, so in our family, like I said, we had that kind of, you know, you went into people's homes and you looked at their libraries kind of thing. So it was always there. But I did, like, by my cousins, when we were supposed to be having fun or something, they'd kind of like say something every now and then. But I think it's just, yeah, it was the ecosystem we grew up in, so it was fine. They all read as much as I do in the end. They just didn't do it in social circumstances.
By the way, this is so fascinating. I don't think I, you know, I think being an avid reader is not that common. I don't meet a lot of women who read a lot. Tell me about the kind of volume that you're reading when you were younger. Was it like a book a week? Was it like a book every few days?
So when I was much younger, so I'd say up until my early 20s, I would be reading two books, sometimes three books at the same time. So you'd have the book that was in the car, that was when you were going and coming from someplace. There was the book that was next to the bed, that's what you were doing. And I just would have like three streams going at the same time. And that was really normal. And I didn't even know that I read very quickly until one of my cousins said, how are you reading that quickly? It was just because I was just so interested in everything. And then in my 30s, I really slowed down, actually. And then it was specific to like design, and it was specific to things like that. And it focused it in a bit more, as opposed to this just giant absorption of the universe. And then I would say, actually, because I was so busy with work and with design and everything, it really, really, really slowed down. And then COVID gave me the gift of reading again, and I'm back on like two a week or something like that. There's just been this blessing that it's given me back. I kind of have remembered who I was before.
Noura, we have parallel lives. I slowed down for sure. And then at some point it was non-existent when I was just company, business. And COVID was a gift. I'm reading, like you said, the same volume I used to read almost as a teenager. Like I'm just consuming so much stuff, and like buying books is like better than a meal now. Like I just can't wait to go home and I have like Audible, and then I have my physical books, and then I get gifts from friends, and then I gift friends books. So I'm in a warp now of just like books and learning, and I've never been happier.
And then just add the podcasts to that.
So English Lit, did English literature in any way prep you for your career in design and jewelry?
Very interesting question. No one's ever asked me that before. I think it helped. I think it absolutely helped in me when I was reading about design and reading about, you know, designers and things like that. And the idea of really kind of deep diving into things came from English Lit as well. But I mean, I don't think, other than that, I don't think it had a direct influence. I mean, I fully thought I was going to be a writer. I had no intention to be a designer, by the way. I mean, at that time, design wasn't really an option to go into. Just remember, this was a while back. So it wasn't anything that I kind of thought would be a viable career, or anything that I even thought I was particularly good at. It was just something that I loved reading about. I loved jewelry, I loved buildings, I loved art, but I come from a very artistic family anyway. So that again was in the ecosystem, it was like in the air.
If you had been a writer, what would you have wanted to write about? Was it fiction, nonfiction, memoir?
Well, now, absolutely, biography, memoir. One of my cousins yesterday said, your ego is so huge, you just want to tell the world all about you. And I'm like... I'm like, no, but I think I've learned a couple of lessons I feel like I could share. You know, I think it might be helpful for people to maybe avoid the mistakes I made, or just, you know, learn from my experiences. Not that like it's of any particular importance. I would like to, I mean, like my graduating thesis was on the Industrial Revolution and the effect on women's independence and the suffragette movement and all of that. And I think maybe something historical, maybe some kind of, you know, because I tend to find a subject and then obsess ridiculously until I know everything about it. And so, yeah. I think something like that would have been really interesting for me. And who knows? I still feel like there may be a book in me somewhere.
So you said that you wanted to become a teacher. So was that the intention when you did English Lit? Like the goal is to become a teacher? Like, did you want to take this into a career?
I thought possibly because I loved English Lit so much, I thought that that really would be something that I would love to get into. And I love, even now, I love kind of learning and teaching and explaining things to people. I love that whole process of just seeing that aha moment when they get it. It's just something I've always loved. And I'm that irritating person who will make you, like, I'll discover something and then I'll make everybody I know watch it or read it or listen to it. Like, I'm the one who shares all these podcasts and you must listen to this and you must. And it's really abusive sometimes to those who are closest to me. But if I find something that I'm excited about, and everybody must know about it.
This podcast is brought to you by O'Brien Hill. O'Brien Hill is a leading communications agency focusing on public relations, event management, and marketing. It's made up of a fantastic group of creatives in the design and PR fields. The agency first came to life in 2010 as my brainchild. Our creative consulting services were in demand in the UK after our online publication Sketchbook became an overnight success. Much like a proud mama, our agency's namesake is attributed to the place of its inception, Notting Hill. It's now 10 years later and we're one of the leading communication agencies in town, and we as a team are incredibly proud to be working on this very podcast behind the scenes. Check us out on www.obyandhill.com. So you said you did a lot of studying into architecture and reading all these design books. Where was that aha moment for you to know that, you know what, it's jewelry and then it's business?
And I think this is why, actually, I believe in just going with the flow, and that eventually the universe, God, is going to take you where you need to be, right? Because there was no inclination, there was no plan, there was like completely uncharted territory. So I literally went into interior design. After a few years, I moved to the UK and I was exploring all of these different kind of things in design, just because that, and I was doing pottery and I was doing all these different things just to kind of explore and see where I wanted to be. And at that point, there were quite a few interior designers, and I knew that I loved design in Saudi, female Saudi interior designers. And I honestly felt like, well, maybe this is something that I could do, and it's a viable, I was trying to be practical, career option, and I went into studying interior design. I had kind of, at that point, redesigned a couple of pieces for my mom and a few other people, just as a hobby, nothing serious, nothing major. And then I was approached by a friend of my mother's who was arranging an exhibition in the UK. And she wanted a young Saudi designer, specifically female. And so she approached me actually thinking that I was studying jewelry design. She thought that's what I was studying. So I showed her my sketchbook, which was just the sketchbook full of sketches. And we agreed that we would make a couple of the pieces, and we did a joint trip to Paris where she dealt with a lot of workshops and I kind of took my sketchbook from workshop to workshop. And each workshop said, well, we'll make this piece and we'll make this piece. And in the end, we had like a mini collection. And I was doing this at the same time I was graduating interior design. And ironically, my graduation project for the interior design was a jewelry shop. This is how all these things come together. It's just bizarre. And she set up this exhibition, and it was the first time I had any kind of exposure in something like that, which was totally outside of what my focus was. But the reaction was so good. And one of the workshops that had seen my sketchbooks offered me an apprenticeship in Paris. And so this opportunity came out of nowhere. I was ready to move back to Riyadh and take a job interior design because that's what I had studied. And I just, you know, I was like, well, do I do this? Do I not do this? And I just jumped in. I just kind of like said, okay, it's an opportunity. I let's try it and see. And I just, being in the workshops and seeing the pieces being made and like that kind of evolution from an idea to an actual beautiful piece of jewelry and the whole process with the craftspeople, I was really blessed to kind of see all of that. And honestly, once you're involved in something like that, I think you become obsessed. You're just hooked and that's it. And from then on, I could not think of anything else.
Where do you get your work ethic from? You know, in your communication with me now, I feel like there's this deep seed to not just only succeed, but just to create and to make and to work and to study. Where does this appetite come from? Because it's very different to go to college and graduate, I think, which most people are like, okay, a college and maybe I'll get a job. But you're like, you know, I want to do beautiful work. I want to have an impact in the world. I can feel it. So where does that come from?
So first of all, I love what I do. Like, I love that thing about getting up in the morning and jumping out of bed. I'm up at like 4:30 every day. And I'm excited for what I'm doing. I'm excited for the people I'm going to interact with that day. I'm excited for the things I'm going to learn. I love what I do. And I feel like I want to do everything at once. I mean, everyone on my team constantly call me a workaholic and they're constantly telling me to stop and rest. But it's not, I mean, yes, sometimes there are projects that are physically tiring. And you do need to learn to give yourself your quiet time and to rest and take care of yourself. But I'm so excited all the time that it's actually very hard for me to kind of slow down. And when I do slow down, that's when I'm researching, that's when I'm reading, that's when I'm discovering new things. And I just, you know, whether it's music, whether it's art, whether it's books, literature, whether it's all of this comes in and it nourishes you and it feeds you. And then, you know, it has to go somewhere. It can't just sit inside you and do nothing. You have to do something with it. And that's what keeps me excited. I actually had, I'm just going to veer off for a second here because you were talking about college and education. For many years, I had this complex about not having that traditional education, and I'm not a real designer because I didn't study design, and I'm not, and I still have major imposter syndrome, like major, like I fight that battle every single day. And for the first like 3 years, I was like, it's just a matter of time till they figure out I don't know what I'm doing. They're going to figure it out at some point. And every time something good happened, I was like, okay, I need to make as little noise as possible because they're going to figure out I don't know what I'm doing. And now I've accepted that I'm just always going to feel like an imposter, but it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, there's the imposter, but also like, I don't want this to be like a cliche question, but coming from the royal family, do you feel judged in any way? Like you said, you didn't follow the traditional path, but you're an entrepreneur and you're like trying to generate profits. Is there any shame that comes with that, or judgment, or why do you work so hard, or why do you need to work, or is that non-existent?
So I grew up in a culture, very much a very strong kind of culture of service, right? You served your community, you supported charities, you do everything you can to help those around you. And it was uncomfortable for a while. I have to say that my family, like my dad, God rest his soul, and my mom have always been super supportive. Most of my family have been super supportive and very loving. A lot of them maybe were uncomfortable buying jewelry from me once the brand was established. It's funny because I had clients before I was a brand who were fine to like commission pieces of jewelry for weddings or for family events, and it was fine. But then when it became a brand, they kind of had, it was strange. And there was a few things, you know, it was maybe it took some time for people to like get used to it. So for example, on on my receipts was Noura Al Faisal Holdings. And I had someone say once, "You sure you want your name on that?" And I'm like, "But it's my receipt. It's the invoice. It's, you know, that's the name of the company," kind of thing. And then I had, for example, and this is someone who's not related to me at all, but I was at the, because, you know, I take part in the Overdress Pavilion in Bahrain every year at the jewelry exhibition. And I had someone who I knew vaguely. I didn't know them very well. And I was standing at the booth, you know, talking to customers. And she came up to me and she said, you don't need to stand here. You can go and sit over there and you don't need to stand here next to your booth. And I was like, oh, interesting. Very interesting that, you know what I mean? So I find with some people that my presence makes them uncomfortable, right? And I've kind of learned now over the years to completely separate the design process from the business part. So I have a team of people now who deal with clients and deal with everyone. I don't do that unless it's a commission piece and the person has asked to deal with me directly and they want that kind of one-on-one consultation, evolution, organic kind of development, then fine. But a lot of people don't really want that. They don't want to think of me at all, kind of thing. And so I've learned that balance. But it was, I mean, like I'd get it's so strange. I get like articles and magazines and like Vogue and stuff like that, or Forbes or something. And I wouldn't share it with anyone because it goes against that kind of ethic kind of thing. You don't kind of self congratulate, you don't kind of do that thing. And so I learned to separate the business of Noon from myself, and I work as an artist, as it were, you know, and I just deal with my art.
It's so fascinating because at large I think a lot of women give up on their dreams because they don't have the courage to put themselves out there, to not conform or to not maybe follow a traditional path of what they should do in whatever capacity that is for their families, right? So for you to say, I'm going to become a business owner, I want to be an entrepreneur, I want to generate income because my work has value, and, you know, to reinvest it back in my business, to reinvest it back in myself, to give back. Like, there's also like a lot of shame with women saying, I want to make money, and it's not bad, it's not shameful. Like, I can take that and buy a gift for somebody or do something for charity, but that's the money I've made. And we're taught, don't share how much you make, don't flaunt yourself, don't put your face on things, right? Like, it goes so much against how we're brought up as not just women, but like,
I think also the timing, kind of, I was on that cusp between the old world and the new world, kind of thing. And so when I first came out, there was this like, don't put your picture out, nobody should see your picture. And then my picture is everywhere and everybody else's picture is everywhere. And it's really normal. And I know people who are part of ad campaigns for brands, and it's, you know, or on the covers of magazines and stuff. And it's, so that shift, I was like right in the middle of that shift between one and the other. Which was a very interesting kind of place to be at. Also, you know, my family was really supportive for many, many, many years. When I was doing commissions, my dad passed away before I established Noon, so he never saw any of the things that came afterwards. God rest his soul. But he was my biggest supporter. He was like, why? I mean, he was the one who told me to start in France. I mean, I never would have done that of my own kind of thinking. That was him. He was like, why don't you just go and compete on their own turf? Why are you like, he was like, just go and do it. And really it was, I mean, after he passed away, it kind of became my mission to kind of create what he wished for me, kind of thing. So I had that. And my mother is the same. My brothers have always been super supportive. As I said, I was very lucky, very blessed in that way.
What part of the design process, do you enjoy the most? Because, you know, you go through a whole process, sketching, concept, sampling, the actual making of things. So which part of that do you feel resonates more with your personality?
I love all of it. I love the whole process. The only things I don't like are, once it's done, pricing. That's the only thing that I don't like. I love sitting down. I have this whole kind of thing where I have to get into the right mood, and I create like a playlist that amplifies that mood. So the music has to be right. There are certain places where I can create, and there are certain places where I just cannot. And so when the stars align and everything is fantastic, I can sit down and lose myself literally for hours. Like I'll be in my office till like midnight sometimes. And then other days I'll go in and I'll sit for hours and do absolutely nothing. So I can't say, like, something inside has to be open and something outside has to be, for lack of a better word, transmitting. I don't know what it is, but something needs to be aligned. And then it's very fast. It's really, really fast. Like I can do in 3 hours, I can do up to 10 designs. Just initial, really, really quick sketches. Then I go back and I draw them out properly. And I send them off. And then this kind of like back and forth organic progress with the craftspeople, with the workshop happens. That can take sometimes, if everything is already perfect, it can take, and the more experienced you are, it does take less and less time, where, you know, a piece can be done in 2 weeks or maximum 3, depending on the complication. And sometimes there'll be a little bit of variation as we move along. But I love that organic process as well. And so in that, you'll have 2 or 3 pieces going at the same time, and you're back and forth between all of them. And then I love just, because I never know what it is. Like, I've never sat down and said, right, I'm going to create a collection, and the collection is going to look like this, and this is what it's going to happen. I kind of open myself up, and I start creating these things or transmitting these things or whatever it is, because I don't believe that the process starts with me at all. Now, I'm not saying that this is anything other than ilham. We have that word, inspiration. It's ilham, but I don't know where, you know, what it is that goes into making that. And then it's only in hindsight that I can look back at a collection of, say, 7 pieces or 8 pieces and understand that there is a connection and understand what the connection is. But I am never, it's never conscious during the process. It's only ever, I can only ever see it in hindsight.
And then from a business perspective, which parts of the business, admin, HR, training, recruitment, strategy, like what parts of that do you enjoy and which parts are you like, somebody else do this, this is not my strength?
First of all, I have to say that when I first started Noon, I mean, I was so insecure, so insecure. I had real issues with things like production and making sure that things were to cost. I had an issue identifying really who my audience was, because I had a particular audience before I established Noon. And then after I established Noon, instead of, and again, this goes back to the imposter syndrome, and it goes back to not feeling secure in yourself and you don't know. I had like people advising me, and they advised me right out of designing, honestly, because it was more about being more commercial, making more pieces, having a lower price point average, which was fantastic, you know, if you want to like expand and have 2 or 3 boutiques. But I'm the only designer is me. It's not like I have a team of designers working with me and making like 3-4 collections per year. And always thinking about the price point and always trying to think, you know, I have to make X amount in order to sell at this amount in order to cover this and make a profit. And that equation was always very difficult for me because my instincts in design were very different from what I was trying to do. And so I found this battle between trying to create what we'll say is high jewelry and the more commercial collections, made it very difficult to actually have something that was successful. Honestly, because I think when you as a designer are not connected to the design that you are producing, people can sense that, right? If there's no joy in the actual product, people sense that for whatever reason or however that is. And so I started losing the client base that I had before because they were not interested in the new products. And I wasn't gaining the new audience that I needed. And there was a lack of authenticity in terms of the designs being true to me and true to my identity, my heritage, or where I was coming from, right? And all of these things together just kind of made us go in a slump. And so I had to, at some point, take control. And the second I made that decision and I understood how I wanted to work and what I wanted to work, so I started listening to my instinct and my gut, then the business module was not an issue at all because it just flowed perfectly. I knew who my audience was. I understood what they wanted. I understood what their price point average was. I understood what the materials I should be using are, and I understood that if I was authentic and true, that that would come out in the products. And so I think that a lot of people think that business is like an equation. Yes, the equation is there, but instinct is there as well, and you have to be able to find that balance between the two, because I mean the people who are advising me were professionals, and you know, they've very successfully advised many other brands, but it just was not right for me. And the only person who can decide that as a business owner is you. You need to know what it is that you're trying to achieve and make sure that you're connecting with that.
I don't know how big your team is right now. I don't know if you can share that with us, but you know, I'd love to know, are you a good manager? Do you think you're a good manager?
I think I'm a better manager than I was. I'm not sure I'm the best manager out there, but again, constantly fighting with this thing of delegation. So at Noon, there's only four of us. And because really there's not much need for more than the four people. And I have like my team Noon, and then I have team Adlal, and I really do feel, I mean, when people come into my circle, as far as I'm concerned, they're family. And then even after they leave, I like to keep that connection because I like to see how their lives are evolving. I like to see, you know, every time they achieve something. And I always think of them, honestly, as like maybe collaborators in the future, you know. So maybe you came here and you did something and then you go and hopefully succeed and then come back and we can do something together. So I really like that kind of idea. And I do love empowering people, specifically women, but I'll empower men too if they need it.
How can someone benefit from Adlal? Like, tell me, you know, how this can fit into a designer's career, like a young designer or a local designer's career.
Adlal for me started out as me trying to understand what was happening in the local design ecosystem. So let me start by saying that Adlal is a social enterprise established 2018, and that we are focused on supporting the evolution of the local design industry. So we focus on infrastructure, we focus on shared knowledge and empowerment. The core of what we do is research. So data, data, data. I mean, that's the most important thing, because when I was really looking into the design kind of sector, I understood that there's so much information that is difficult to get to, that's not shared widely enough. There's so many things about the local ecosystem, organizations, people who are working simultaneously, but not in coordination. So the idea was to really look into the local environment. We are in the process of finalizing the first industry report into the local design sector. We have two white papers that we have just published. They're available for download on our website. It's about sharing the knowledge that will empower people. We're working on learning and development. But again, we take that research. We identify where the gaps are in the ecosystem and what needs to be done. And then we share the knowledge that will help empower the design industry to evolve into what it needs to. So I look at the design industry as a business sector, as completely fitting into Vision 2030, in terms of empowerment, creating jobs, really contributing to the GDP, really also as it grows and evolves, being something that is kind of a way of cultural diplomacy, and just kind of, there's so many things that go into it that have nothing to do with actually the design process. So many things that can be beneficial. And so that's what Adlal aims to do. So in essence, it's a community. And so you can come in and be part of that community. And the community supports each other. We're working on indexes that make it easier for job seekers, that makes it easier for businesses, for government, or for anyone to connect in the way that they need to, including with manufacturers. We're working with lawyers to work on legislature to help enable and tweak things that might actually make starting a business or really just trading worldwide or anything like that much easier. It's a long process, but it's in essence, we aim to be what we call Hamzat Wasl. So we want to be that connecting kind of center of the web that brings all these people who are working so hard within the ecosystem together, so that we can focus, so we have the same kind of roadmap, and so that we can identify next steps, always identify next steps. So we hope to evolve as the ecosystem evolves.
You know, this is fascinating to me because I feel like this goes back to your roots of being of service to the community. And, you know, you wear multiple hats. So there's Noura the learner, Noura the designer, and then there's also the Noura that is, you know, going back to, like, you know, the culture of your family as well, and where you were brought up, which is how do we serve the community. And what I love is you've really focused on something that you were passionate about. So you're zooming in on the space and you're like, this is my contribution. And it's full circle, because I find that a lot of brands in fashion and retail, you know, have these outlets for CSR and impact, because we're producing and making, but also there is this angle that we do care about. You know, it's not always about, you know, buying these things, but, you know, it's also about, you know, how do we help the world, you know, become better? So I love that you've integrated that in your life, you know, as the outlet.
So I think it's three things here. So I think, yes, absolutely, that culture of being of service. The second point is also, you know, all the things that I need and don't exist right now, I want to make so that they're there. And then the third thing is still the essence of when I find something out and I understand how something works, I need everybody to know how it works as well. So it's that same thing that I do in my small social circle, but on a much grander scale.
That's it for this week. Thank you for listening to an episode of the Women Power Podcast. And thank you for downloading and streaming our podcast every week. If you love what you've heard, tag us on Instagram and follow the Women Power Podcast and Women Power Summit account for more information on our next episode. Please leave a rating review wherever you get your podcast. It really helps other women discover the show. That's it from me. See you next week.